All righty, I now call this regular meeting of the Vanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty, now we will talk about the adoption of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I just have...
With the new business?
Yeah, I've got a few items to add. Two of them are really short. One may be a little lengthier, but under unfinished business, I want to talk about new business.
Let's talk about the business updates.
Yes, business updates.
Just give us updates on businesses that we've talked about in the past.
Yep, then under new business, there's an item called local allocations for federal CARES Corona Relief Funds. And then also under new business is just property acquisition.
All righty. Do we have a motion?
So made.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion made by Ms.
Second. Pfeiffer.
Seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien is not present yet, so he's an absent, and chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
He's
yep,
sure.
I looked over and saw it. All righty. Mr. Dahl, if you want to go ahead with your report.
Yep. Mr. Chair and members of the board, I have a few things to report on once it pulls up here. Okay, so under staff and community recognitions, obviously with what's happening in the world and in Fluvanna County currently, I just want to make sure that the board members and the community are aware of community service awards. Right now, we've got a lot of organizations and individuals just doing a lot of great work, from collecting food, distributing food, making masks, free masks for individuals, shopping for at-risk customers. So I just want to remind the public and individuals that they can nominate an individual or an organization through our community service award area. If you go to the county website in the link here, you can nominate an individual or an organization. So like I said, just want to make sure that we're recognizing those individuals that have done a lot of great work for the county. In addition, UVA Health is offering a free community call line during the COVID-19 pandemic, so anyone can call the UVA Health community and talk to a doctor to discuss medical problems, medication needs. The call is completely free. They'll give you give you some advice and information. It's Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the number is on the screen here at 434-98 COVID, and you hit option 3. And I believe Ms. Harris also has this through fan mail on the website as well somewhere. And it's going to be going there if not. Couple announcements about unemployment in the county. So as we've reported before, Fluvanna has a workforce of approximately 14,400 individuals in the workforce. So go looking through the Virginia Employment Commission, the continued claims are those individuals currently receiving unemployment. And through May 9th, that was, if you take the number, which is 943 out of our 14,400 workforce, that accounts for 6.5%. In addition to that, though, if you look at this chart below, there's a lot of claims that are outstanding, basically people that applied. So if you say through May 9th, they're showing that people are getting claims, but usually from the Virginia Employment Commission, they're usually going to be at least probably 3 to 4 weeks behind in actually processing the claims when people applied for them. So what we did, we just took basically claims back as an estimate going back through April 18th through May 9th as well, which is about 644 claims. So So that works out of our workforce. That's about 4.5%. So we're looking at right now, the potential unemployment in the county is right around 11%. Now, you know, give or take, you know, plus or minus a percent or two, but I think that's looking at the numbers and basing that on our workforce, that's a pretty good round estimate for what the current unemployment is.
Where are we nationwide? What's that figure? I've heard, but I forget.
I don't know where we are nationwide. We can pull
it's
that.
It's like 20%.
Okay, Michelle.
20%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One other thing as well. So tomorrow, the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, monthly, they have a mayors and chairs meeting. So Mr. Sheridan is always invited, and then myself go to the TJPDC. And usually, when we don't have COVID, we're going there, and it's live and in person to meet to kind of just talk about what's going on in the community and in the region, in the Thomas Jefferson, the Planning District Commission region. Tomorrow, they're actually having a virtual meeting, a special meeting, and in addition to myself and Mr. Sheridan, I think Mr. Sheridan, are you signed up for it?
I'm going out of town, so we probably can get two.
Okay, so what they want to do, a Zoom meeting, and so, you know, it's really about talking about, you know, what does the county plan on doing? Is that Mr. O'Brien coming in? Because he may be one on the... on this one. What does the county plan on doing about reopening up? You know, what are we doing for virtual meeting policies? What is the status of administrative public offices, employee teleworking, the FY21 budget and revenue concerns, communication, and then, you know, just cancellation changes. So tomorrow between noon and 1:45, there's an opportunity for two, since Mr. Sheridan's not going to be here, there's an opportunity for two board members to participate in a Zoom meeting with the folks from the TJPDC and our counterparts. So is there anyone else that would want to be able to access that? I can get you the information.
Mr. Dahl, I'll do that. This is Patricia.
Okay, so, and Mr. O'Brien said he'd like, I think.
No, I'm just looking right now.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'm going to be out of town, and to let the record show, Mr. O'Brien is present.
I should be able to go to that.
Okay, so I'll, Mrs. Eager and Mr. O'Brien, I'll get you the information to log in for the Zoom meeting tomorrow, and so you can be there. And like I said, just kind of hearing what your counterparts in other localities are doing and as far as COVID-19 and our community. So. And then just one final thing, what I'm going to probably do, I'm going to probably just have this one page here in the co-ed report going forward, and it's nothing that I need to go over, but it's just something to show what some county information resources are. You know, we have the county website, we have fan mail, we have Facebook and Twitter, so this is just going to kind of be a stock thing, so it's just always there for individuals. Kind of be able to see what areas that they can get information from the county. Fan mail contains a lot of good helpful information for what's going on and what's current, as well as the website and everything else. They all kind of connect with one another. So if someone's not getting the information electronically, they should, because those are a lot of areas where they can get it. So as far as some upcoming meetings, we have a regular meeting at 4 p.m. on June 3rd. Our regular meeting on June 17th at 7 p.m. And then if you remember, our July meeting, we only have one meeting in July. And it's the first meeting of July, which is Wednesday, July 1st. So we'd have a 4 p.m. meeting and then a 7 p.m. meeting. And then we would not meet for the rest of the July until August. So, like I said, unless the board has any questions for me.
You think you can hold it down? Without us?
I think we could do that.
Okay.
I think we can do that for a month. Unless the board is just itching to have a special meeting in July.
Sure. Call a special meeting.
We could if you want.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Dalton. Yeah. Okay. We will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please keep your comments on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak to the board at this time? Seeing no one online, I will now close the first round of public comment. All righty. Next, we have public hearings. A, VDOT, secondary six-year plan.
Yeah. We're gonna...
Bethel.
Yep. Ms. Harris is
going to... I'm not even going to try to mess it up this time, Bethel.
That's all right. Yeah. Good evening, Chairman Sheridan, and members of the board. Can you all hear me well?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Great. So we held a work session back in April to discuss FY21's secondary six-year plan, and the board had asked us to perform counts on Route 648 Turner Road to determine if it was eligible, and you'd also asked about whether Pleasant Grove Road could also be eligible, and I have some updates on that. Turner Road had already been scheduled to get recounted this year, and the counts were made back in March, even before we had last met. And unfortunately, the vehicle's still under 50, which means that it does not qualify to be added to the plan as a rural rustic this year. And then I did talk to Alan and the team about that portion of Pleasant Grove that we had talked about beyond that cul-de-sac. And because it's not part of currently part of the state system, it would have to be improved to the state standards before we could start maintaining it. And that includes having design plans and testing the pavement, doing video inspections of the culverts and those other items that are typically associated with the street acceptance. And so we don't recommend that that's added to the plan at this time. As far as the draft, I don't know if you have it up in the slide deck, but last year's plan had 5 projects on it. And so far, 2 of those have been completed, including the Middle Fork Rural Rustic and also the Columbia Survey, which is being reviewed by VDOT right now. And then the proposal for the next year's or for FY21's plan has the 3 projects, including the South Boston Road intersection improvements and Old Fork Lane Rural Rustic.
Bethel, really quick. I'm sorry, this is Eric Gall. I've got your draft up. Which page do you want me to go to of the draft that you presented back in April?
Do you have, I sent Caitlin an updated draft plan that had, it was in the package that is on the website.
One second. There you go. Okay.
Okay. Right. So you scroll down. This is what is currently being proposed. I mean, Middle Fork Road, that first project has already been completed. But the 3 that would remain on the plan is the Main Street Survey and PE study, which we're still reviewing, and then also the South Boston Road intersection improvements and the Old Fork Road rustic. So, like, our proposal is that at least for the next fiscal year, no new projects are added, and that any funds that are received are placed in one of the balance entry accounts for future use. Those funds won't be available for 6 years anyway, so there's plenty of time at a later date to determine what project you'd like to allocate those to. And as far as, you know, what those allocations will be, we don't really know yet. They're still reviewing like our revenues and what the projections will be. And we are looking better than I think other states is what I've heard. VDOT's in a pretty good shape, but they still want to wait to see what the projections are going to be, what we can expect for this next fiscal year before they release that information. So do you have any questions about that?
My only question would be this. Actually, I can ask Mr. Dahl this later. But I was going to ask, who would be the one to talk to about the road improvements we'd have to make? That'd be Roger.
You don't want a Pleasant Grove?
Yeah, Pleasant Grove. That'd be Roger.
Well, no. I mean, we'd have to talk to Calvin. I mean, I guess regarding from the county standpoint. I mean, the county did some initial due diligence on that, and the amount of money that we have sitting there is not even in the ballpark of being enough. you know, after he looked at it, you know, he said with some of the money first, some of the main things that would need to be done was addressing some of the culverts and some of the sides of the road first to deal with some of the water and drainage issues before you even did anything with the roadway. So, you know, I don't know what that stretch of road would cost, but I would bet you it'd probably be close to $300,000 easily.
Just for the improvements?
Yeah. Just to probably get it up to what VDOT, where VDOT needs. Mm-hmm. And Bethel, do you all usually have, do you have kind of an estimate for how much it takes to get a road up to VDOT standards per mile or something like that?
Sure, we can provide an estimate. We can have someone do like a formal inspection and do that.
Yeah, that would be helpful if someone could do that. And if, like I said, if you want to reach out to me, I can round up our public works director and some other individuals to meet whoever out there that needs to be, so we can get a good idea of what it would really take. Because we've been talking about this for a while, and I don't know if there's any opportunities for grants or anything else that we could do.
I think previously the county had applied for a recreational access grant for that road, but like you had mentioned, I think a lot of the hurdles that were uncovered after you received the funds ended up being environmental issues, like with the culverts and permits needed. And that portion of the work is not, you're not able to use recreational access funds for. They're not, like, you can't use those funds for right of way, for environmental improvements. They can only be used for the actual road construction, and I think that was something that halted the project previously.
So if the county has roughly $100,000 to put into the project that they've set aside, would there be a way for VDOT to or the recreation access funds to match that somehow?
I think that there is a way to do that, and we can discuss it.
Okay. I think that if we bring this up to the people that are involved in the different leagues, that a lot of them that, well, I won't say a lot of them, but there are some of them that coach and are part in the leagues themselves. They might have construction companies that might be willing to volunteer some time to put a culvert pipe in. Just food for thought, and you know, because it's going to help them by improving getting to where they want to go.
Well, like I said, if there's an opportunity to somehow use the funds, I mean, like I said, that's up to the board. Like I said, there's been money that's been allocated that's been sitting there for a little bit, but if there's some way to complete that, if that's what we want to use those already committed funds for, then that would be helpful.
Thank you so much.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. Okay,
yes,
I don't know if Bethel can answer this, and maybe this is a question for Fluvanna's VDOT. I've noticed on secondary roads that they're doing some patching. Usually the patching is very well lined up, and then they come back and put the lines. There's one road, 650 Thessalonia. I was surprised to see that the asphalt was just kind of, it was if they had leftover asphalt, so let's just spread it here. Now, I've also have learned that maybe sometimes they use the leftover asphalt to go in some potholes or build up the side and then come back and do asphalt and make it neat. But right now, where I've seen it somewhere else too, and I can't remember which road it was, the way it's spread right in front of the driveway of a very immaculate home, and it just doesn't look good. So Bethel, you may want to refer me to talk to, I guess, Palmer. Have
the
dot people doing this kind of work, or are they not?
Yes, it's likely them. I will say I'm looking at the the list of roads that are supposed to be resurfaced this year, and it might be what you suspected, where they just did a quick patch before the road's going to get resurfaced. Yeah, 650 is on the list this year.
Okay. So that may be what they're doing. I just didn't know if I can tell the people who are living on the road that had some concerns.
Yeah, that may be it. I'll follow up with our resurfacing folks and ask them what's up, and I'll let you know what they say.
Bethel, I have a question. This is Trish. I've had a couple calls. One was from the person who lives on Blue Ridge Lane. It's off of 250. They were wondering if it's possible to get a turn lane onto that road. And I know you have to go through a lot of red tape to get that done, I think. And yeah. I have another question on, you can answer that one first and then I'll ask you the other one.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just gonna say that Eric did remind me about that. I think you'd mentioned that request previously, and I did pass that through to our traffic engineers and requested that they do a study to see if a right turn lane is warranted, so they are working on that.
Okay, thank you. And the other one is a man who lives on Ridgeway Farm Road, which is off of Beaver Dam Road, which is 799. It's a gravel road, and I think it serves just a few houses. And he wanted to know if it could be taken into the system. But I don't, do you take gravel roads? And you don't, do you?
No, we do not take gravel roads into the system.
Okay, so I'll just tell him, got to fix it yourself. And the what's a rural rustic definition? Is that a gravel road or is that a paved road?
No, a rural rustic is typically the gravel road that is already in the state system, and it's low volume road. Well, it has to be over 50 vehicles per day, and you can program that into your secondary six-year plan to be improved and get surface treated. We would put in new culverts, regrade the ditches, and surface treat the road, and put a speed limit signs up.
Okay, well, this doesn't serve very many homes, so I don't know if it would be possible to take it into the rural rustic roads.
Ridgeway Farm Road?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is, I think it has to serve, I don't know the number off the top of my head, there has to be a certain number of roads per mile, or homes per mile that it serves before we can take it in, but I can look into it, and it might be eligible for a rural addition, which is for roads that are not currently in the state system.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Are there any?
I'll let him know that you're going to look into it.
Yes, we will.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Bethel. We appreciate you every time you come.
Yep, thank you. I appreciate it and hope you guys have a great night.
Do we have a motion?
Public hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got to do the public hearing part of it. All right, right now. Oh, shoot. There we go. We'll now open the public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak, please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Seeing no one, I'll now close the public hearing. Are there any comments or questions from the board? Do we have a motion?
I move to accept the resolution for the VDOT secondary six-year plan 2020 through 21 through 2025 through 26 and VDOT's construction priority list 2020 through 2021 as required by sections 33.1-23 and 33.1-23.4 of the code of the 1950 Code of Virginia.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now have B, the public hearing to readopt the continuity of operations ordinance. Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'll kind of go through this really quick. We've been talking about this for quite some time. Again, this is readopting the continuity of operations temporary ordinance. So the board on April 1, 2020, did approve originally to approve an emergency ordinance for continuity of operations. This ordinance basically allows the board to meet as they're doing today without a quorum, virtually via telephone, for matters that are directly either one related to the emergency or for continuity of operations and government. Just as a reminder, this does not allow for all normal business. So anything that is not for continuity of operations, you know, for instance, if we wanted to start some type of elective new program, we could not bring that forward to the board under these types of terms, under these conditions. It's just for, as I said, continuity of operations. So the previous time we didn't need to do a public hearing because it's an emergency ordinance. But because we can only do that for 60 days, and then if we want to readopt the same ordinance, we now have to do a public hearing this time around. And so we've advertised for the public hearing. We were going to have the public hearing today. And then once, and assuming the board approves this, then this allows the board to meet for another 60 days if they choose like this, or they could still approve this for the 60-day period and only meet for one meeting if they want. So, but again, if it goes beyond the 60-day period again, we would have to do a public hearing again and then have kind of go through the same readoption again. So public hearing was advertised May 7th and 14th, and that's really all we have. This cannot go on for more than 6 months. And I'd be happy to answer any questions from the board.
Are there any questions? Okay, hearing none, I will now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak to the board at this time? Ms. Harris is shaking her head no, so that means nobody's on the telephone for us, so I'll now close first the public hearing. Any other comments from the board? Do I have a motion?
I move the Fulana County Board of Supervisors approve ordinance.
I move the Fulana County. Go ahead, Tony.
I move Savannah County Board of Supervisors approve the ordinance entitled to readopt an emergency ordinance to effectuate temporary changes in certain deadlines and to modify public media and public hearing practices and procedures to address continuity of operations associated with pandemic disaster.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move forward with the action matters. C, the Adult Drug Court and Veterans Treatment Court Discretionary Grant Program Grant. Ms. Twisdale.
So just one thing. So if the board remembers, before we kind of get into this, during the budget process, drug court was talked about, and we talked about, careful, it was talked about that it's going to come out of the fiscal year 2021 BOS contingency, but in order to move forward, there's lots of agreements that need to be completed, and I'll let Ms. Twisdale take it from here, and I'll pull up the brief. And then during this presentation, too, we've got lots of folks on the phone and on the Zoom meeting that can participate.
As for Mr. Gold stated, OAR came to us in their nonprofit presentation, indicated they were interested in the drug court. The board also indicated they were interested, and it sounded a lot simpler in the conversation than it turned out to be. Savannah County is applying for a grant for adult drug court. The grant is a total of $500,000. It's for 36 months beginning October 1st of 2020. The grant funds would provide offender aid and restoration, or to hire and supervise a drug court coordinator for the Savannah County Drug Court. Plus, it would provide funds for client recovery, support, purchase drug testing supplies. The goal of the program is to serve 25 adults who've been charged with a felony in circuit court and to divert them out of the criminal justice system. The grant requires a 25% cash or in-kind match. Now, the board said in the budget, the board put $45,000 in the FY21 budget to go toward this, and there's already $5,000 in the FY20 budget, which is a cash contribution from Savannah County of $50,000. The $75,000 difference would be in-kind services that would be covered from the circuit court clerk, sheriff, and Commonwealth Attorney's office. So the services that they provide would make up the $75,000.
It would be in-kind services for the work that they're doing.
Now, in order to do this, the county must establish a drug court advisory committee. And this committee would determine all criteria for eligibility, policies, and procedures of the drug court. Next one. And this is the proposed advisory committee and the members. I do want to mention that there is more of a time involvement for Mr. Dahl than we had originally been told. So that's just an FYI that he's going to be intimately involved with this.
And so that's the whole proposed list of advisory committee members. You got Judge Moore, you got Commonwealth Attorney, Sheriff, Clerk of the Circuit Court. You got James Cook, Defense Attorney, Sherry Stater, Fluvanna County Victim Witness Coordinator, Aisha Williams, Director for Region 10, Ross Crew, Executive Director for OR, Susan Morrow, Assistant Director for OR, Amy Morris, Probation Officer, District 9, Neil Goodlow, Criminal Justice Planner, myself, and then Kim Mabe, Director of Social Services.
Also, a memorandum of agreement has been drafted between Fluvanna County and Offender Aid and Restoration of Charlottesville. That's also a requirement of this. I do want to thank Christina Hoffman from Fred's office. She worked very hard and very quickly to get this put together for us. And tonight we are asking for the board to approve the memorandum of agreement, give us permission to submit a grant application, and accept the advisory committee as listed. We have quite a few people on the line, Sheriff Hess, I believe, Commonwealth Attorney, Clerk of Court, I believe the judge is on here, as well as Ms. Morrow, for anybody that has questions.
I don't see the judge.
I think the judge may be with Ms.
Morrow. Okay.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, are there any questions from the board?
Sounds good.
I'd like to know what the program is. How does it work? What was in our packet is the contract. What would these people do to help the people who are in the drug court?
Mr. Hayslip, if you're there, do you want to speak on behalf of that, or do you want to pass the baton to someone else?
Well, if she's asked, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Is that Ms. Eager?
Yes.
If you're asking how the drug court works, it's a multiple phase program that takes on average about 14 months to complete. And when a person is a high risk and high needs individual as far as being a long-term drug user and has needs as far as placement and jobs and things like that, if they agree to go into the drug court, they're facing a criminal charge, they will plead guilty to that charge, and then part of their sentence will be that they successfully complete the drug court program. The first phase of the program is you meet on a weekly basis. You have a Region 10 and health, mental health, substance abuse evaluation, as well as a medical evaluation, a medical checkup. So it works on all parts of the person. They come to court every week. They're in group treatment programs, they're in individual counseling, and they're drug tested regularly, but randomly. And when they get through the first phase of the program, if they pass that successfully, which includes, I believe, 14 days of testing cleanly, then they move into phase two, where they come to court every other week. They start working on job skills. They start working on building their family relationships back. So they're met with, most days of the week, they're meeting with someone. Eventually, they get to the point where they have to be working. They have to have behavioral, their cognitive training, which changes their way of thinking about certain things. And the whole goal is to build the relationship back with the community and the family of somebody who has basically for the last few years been living day to day just trying to get drugs one way or the other.
Has it been done in other communities?
Yes, it has, and we're very blessed in Fluvanna County to have OAR and Judge Moore, Circuit Court Judge, as our partners in this, because they've been doing it for 20 years. They just had their 20th year anniversary, and it was Channel 29 and all those places covered it right before this COVID thing hit. So we've learned a lot from their trial and error over the years. So the processes that we're using, some of the requirements that we have, and some of the requirements, frankly, we don't have, they've learned over 20 years what works and what doesn't work. And the goal of the Supreme Court Drug Court Advisory Committee is to have a drug court in every circuit in the state. And right now, I forget the number, but there are very, very many drug courts. I think Susan might be able to tell you the exact amount, but it's in most areas of the state right now.
Okay. go ahead, Mrs.
No, you go ahead and finish, and then I'll come on.
Okay. I also wanted to know, the application seems pretty severe. I mean, do you have enough time to get that in by June 1?
I'll defer to Susan if she wants to, but we have done quite a few different apps. Susan did all the work, and Ross and Neil Goodlove have done most of the work. But the application and the information in the applications are things that, you know, we had to apply to this for them to approve us, which they did. And a lot of the information is able to be used from one application to another. So I don't think there's any question Susan feels like we could do that. This is the grant we thought we were going to be applying for a few months ago that I believe this is the same grant that said they weren't going to do the grant, and they are. So I think we're very well prepared for that.
Okay. And it said that they look for persistent poverty counties with at least 20% poverty. Does our county have that?
I'll defer to Susan. Go ahead, Susan.
This is Susan. The answer is no. Fluvanna County does not qualify under that. It does qualify, though, as a mostly rural county.
Okay. So, and if we don't get the grant, then what happens?
Then we operate the way we are. We're going to do the best we can without it. And we'll try to get money from other sources. There's other things that we can do once we get up and running. A lot of the language used in the document you're looking at is in the past tense, and a lot of that's already been done. So we're prepared, and we've all vowed and pledged that we're going to do this, you know, with or without the grant, and we'll put it together any way we can in kind contributions. Just doing, the sheriff's office is chipping in, the clerk's office, OAR, everybody's chipping in. So we're going to do the best we can, but we feel comfortable that we will find some funding. It's a very popular program, and we already have our first participant. We had our first participant enter 2 weeks ago. He had his first update this Friday. He's doing very well. We'll see him again in 2 days, and I hope he's still doing well. But it's somebody we've been dealing with for years who's had a terrible drug problem, and he looks better. He looked better Friday than I've seen him in a long, long time. So that's the whole idea.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And I think when you hear the word drug, you think of illegal drugs. You're talking about alcoholism as well.
Yes, alcohol. People with alcohol issues are certainly eligible. Most of what we do see, though, will be probably opiates, scheduled one or two narcotics, but alcoholics are certainly eligible to be in there if they meet the other criteria.
And they have to have done something against the law, like driving intoxicated, Do they have to have be a felon?
In most cases,
Go ahead.
In most cases, they will be felons, if not all cases, because the drug court is so intensive and so difficult that the person really has to be facing some pretty severe other option to agree to drug court. We would wish everybody would want help and come running to us, but that's not the way it works. It'll be people that are up against it, and drug court's the better option, and they'll come in and see that it's a better way to be. So, there are certain felons that can't be in. They can't be violent crimes. They can't be multiple time drug dealers, or have certain amounts of drugs on them. But we'll see a lot of people that have possession of drugs. Or larceny that's based on drugs. It's any felony or any crime like that drugs is the reason for it. We'll see a lot of things like larcenies, things like that as well.
Okay, when you think of Blue Vanna County, do you have any needs assessment that you can say where we are with people that are using drugs, and are you talking about 18-year-olds, anyone who is an adult? Do we have anything like that?
Do you mean like the a breakdown by age and other things like that?
Yeah.
The only numbers we would have like that would be people who have been, Neil Goodloe may have something like that as far as people who have been in or out of the Central Virginia Regional Jail, but we wouldn't keep numbers just like that. But I can tell you, if we're doing this for 25 years, Booker, we're going to have people from 18 or 19 to their 40s and 50s. This type of thing is a lifelong problem unless something like this steps in and breaks that cycle. So that's what we're trying to do.
Right. Okay.
All right, are there any other questions?
Mr. Hayes, are there any other individuals on the call that you want to have a chance to speak on behalf of this, or?
I'll open the floor to them after I say this, and I'm not trying to, I appreciate all the work Christina did on it and Mariana, and Eric, Mr. Dahl and I had talked months ago about having a county member on the advisory committee, and I know it looks a little busy when you're at this stage of it, but as far as time commitment, but I assure you we won't overtax Mr. Dahl or Kelly if whichever one of those can make it to the advisory committee. It's something that's going to meet. We were going to meet monthly in the beginning, and then it'll probably be a quarterly meeting at some point. So it's not something that Mr. Dahl will be taken away from the county on a regular basis.
I'm getting ready to come off, I think, the jail board.
I have another
question. I was going to say, if he gets worn down, I know what budget to get the money from.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Booker.
Does the treatment include the family?
I can't speak for Region 10. I know the initial treatment is for individual and group as far as drugs, but I do know that one of the goals is to, when we're talking about placement, when we're talking about people with children, part of, as we get into phase 3 and 4, there's family connections that are being built, there's time spent with the children. It does involve reconnecting the family, but I can't say that the actual treatment involves that, but that is one of the goals by the end of drug court. That person, the goal is to have them reconnect with their family, be it their parents if they're younger, or children, or both. So that is a very big focus of drug court.
All right, thank you.
Was there anyone else that wanted to speak? All right, hearing none, are there any other questions from the board? Okay, hearing none, and we are on an action matter, so I don't have to have a public comment. Do we have a motion?
was actually just.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the Fluvanna County Drug Court Memorandum of Agreement between the County of Fluvanna and Offender Aid and Restoration of Charlottesville Albemarle Inc. and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, we got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver first. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. That motion passes 5-0. How about motion number two?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the application submission for the Adult Drug Court ADC and Veterans Treatment Court VTC discretionary grant program. Grant in the amount of $500,000 to fund startup costs of Fluvanna County Drug Court and authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr.
Second.
Yes, ma'am. Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. And the last, third motion?
Is that the third motion?
That's
the
third. Well, this, I mean, they're all together. This is actually a separate agenda item, so I'm not sure how to put it. They're all kind of tied together with one another.
This is just approving the advisory committee.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we need to go ahead. And we've already done this, talked about this.
The motion and everything, there's no additional presentation for
right.
it. So it's already
so
done.
Mr. O'Brien?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the establishment of a Fluvanna County Adult Drug Court Advisory Committee and further appoint the members as presented on the staff report effective May 21st, 2020, with the terms expiring annually or until replacements are appointed.
Do we have a second?
Aye.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager.
Second.
All righty. Ms. Eager?
Second.
Yes, ma'am, we've got it. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right, there are no appointments and no presentations. We'll now move forward with the consent agenda. E, the minutes of April 29th, 2020. F, minutes of May 6th, 2020. G, CRMF, Fluvanna County Public Schools, Central Fire Alarm Panel Replacement, Mr. Striblin. H, CRMF, Fluvanna County Public Schools, Central Roof Sealant, Mr. Striblin. I, CRMF, Public Schools, School Board Office Generator, and that's also Mr. Striblin. J, Transportation Fleet, Retrofit AC Units, Mr. Striblin. K, Accounts Payable Report for April 2020, Ms. McIver. L, Stage Junction Agricultural Forestal District. Review and renewal, Mr. Robinson. M, approval of Mr. Andrew W. Wills, CBO, as the building official for Fluvanna County, Mr. Douglas Miles. N, FY21 health insurance rates and contribution schedule, Mr. Dahl. Are we pulling anything?
I want to talk about some things on this.
Yes, sir.
First of all, the school system, they have three items here on the school capital reserve. And in 2019, they had $194,149,000. Then we came to 2020, and naturally at the year, we had another $250,000. So that came up with $444,149 balance. The past bills then, after that $444,000, was $190,000, which left them with $354,105. That's the balance as of May the 20th. They're asking for items H, I, and J of being $211,000, which would leave them $143,000. That's for the three main.
That should be 254.
Okay. which includes age, well, is the central roof for $42,000, the office for $69,000, and the air conditioner for the buses for $100,000, which is $211,000. And the point I'm making is, if you will recall, last board meeting or on May the 6th, we had a bill of $658,000, which included the historic courthouse, $250,000, Pleasant Grove, $98,000, ambulance, $190,000, library, $50,000, and the renovate the middle school for $70,000, which is a total of $658,000. The point I'm making is, I think we need to start looking at the next year's budget. We're through and have approved this year's budget, but we need to look ahead. So we're really talking about $869,000 total with the two. And I know that Tony has had some comments how we're going to pay for all these things. And I suggest that we put these items on the next board meeting and sort of start to address some of these items, both for the school and for us, and determine how we can pay for these or the ones that we might not want. Does this make sense?
Mr. If I could just make just a couple comments. One, the transportation fleet, they're not requesting any new dollars for that. They've got money currently.
What do you mean the transportation fleet?
Buses. Under the AC units one,
right,
which is item J.
Right.
They currently have $100,000 to purchase a new bus. What they are asking to do, because when the board appropriated the money, it was to purchase new buses. What they are asking for is, instead of purchasing a new bus for $100,000, take that $100,000 and then put in 10 AC units in newer existing buses. So they're not using.
Yeah, but still $100,000.
It is $100,000.
And if that money's that loose, then let's see where we can place it. Why are we starting air conditioning in the buses now?
Mr. Stribling's on the line, and I'm sure he would be happy to chime in on that. And just before he comes on, let me just address the other three, G, H, and I. Those are the school's CRM, Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund request. You know, a couple of them are what the CRMF is intended for, replacement or repairs of buildings or infrastructure that needs it. And that's the purpose of having the CRMF fund there, is to fix, you know, if we have a central fire alarm panel that needs replacement, or the central roof sealant. Mr. Stribling and I, we went a little bit back and forth on the school board generator, because it falls a little bit outside of...
Well, we can talk about that.
It falls a little outside of the parameter, but I think there's a need for it there. So, like I said, they can certainly talk about that, but...
Well, the central roof is $42,000, and they say it's been leaking for 10 years. That seems to be a problem just to begin with. Why has it been leaking for a year? And what's a new roof cost in comparison to what we're doing? Want to do here?
Okay, is Mr. Stribling, can you are you on?
I am. Good evening, everyone. How is everyone?
Good.
We're here.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. So I'll go backwards. The transportation. So there was conversation. We have about $106,000 in our CIP fund, and we had conversations based on many different community concerns regarding during the early or late summer months, early school months, regarding the temperatures and students on the bus. We have currently, in our last two orders, where we've been able to purchase buses to replace the ones that are older, have been integrating ACs in the newer buses that we have purchased. The retrofit would, like Mr. Dahl said, be in our newer buses, 5 years or less, to update those. And as we continue that cycle, and in a presentation several months ago, regarding the bus cycle. We're trying to get that to a 15 to 20 year cycle. So we wouldn't need any funds. We have current funds in our CIP transfer piece based on several, not one or two, but many different community concerns about the safety of our kids on the bus. That would be J.
That's the air conditioning in the buses.
And this is CIP money left over from this past year, correct?
It was CIP. It's CIP money. So the money that's
several years.
Yeah, the money that's in the CIP, it's always there. So it is dollars that they could purchase a brand new bus with that money. One bus is about, say, $100,000.
But what kind of attitude is that? Well, it's left over, so we can go ahead.
It's not left over. The money is always there.
It's from the year before.
Yeah. CIP is money that's always been allocated, and it rolls over from year to year.
2019 carryover was $194,000. The year 2020 was $250,000. That's the new year, which left $444,000.
I think you're looking at the CRMF balance.
Yeah,
this doesn't come out of the
bus. It says the school capital reserve.
Yes, but the buses are not coming out of the AC parts are not coming out of the school capital reserve. The retrofit the AC units, that's coming out of the bus CIP line, not out of the CRMF.
Well, air conditioning is $100,000.
How many buses?
It's 10.
That bus is cheaper than $1 million.
Huh?
Cheaper than $1 million.
Yeah, but where do we stop? I'm thinking about next year, the problems we're going to face in this budget. I'm going beyond just this.
Right, sure. Well, they're
going into now. I'm looking down the road, and what can we do? Is that a top priority, or is it middle priority, or is it the bottom priority? Where are the priorities? That's what I want to do, is establish priorities, like with the other things that this county on our side needs to do, whatever that is.
Yeah, I mean, if they're 5 year and under buses, I mean, they're going to be in service for another
at least
10 to 15 years.
Yeah, hopefully
so,
15.
So, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, that's a long time to not have those vehicles without air conditioning.
But we haven't had them in the past.
No, we haven't. You know,
and that $100,000.
I mean, I'm not a bus driver. He is, so he's better. He's better to educate us on the challenges of it.
I mean, we've been driving on them for 80 years without air conditioning, but. I will say it is nice to have it on there.
It's nice.
The first time I ever drove one was when we went down for the state championship game. And I drove one for 2 hours. I mean, I've driven one to Florida in an 85-degree heat. That was miserable.
Did you open the windows?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
we got the air conditioning.
And what time of year was that?
But March or April. Like I said, it was 85 degrees.
I think another point, though, is, I mean, this is a school
May
year.
I say something?
Just a moment, Ms. Booker.
Yes, ma'am, but Mr. O'Brien is trying to say something.
I think when I try to get on, I think I'm delayed.
Yes,
I
ma'am.
I think you hear me after 2 or 3 minutes. We have to realize that so many of our children are on the bus for a long period of time. And if you don't understand how hot the bus can be, then we need to maybe jump on the bus on a hot day and find children with some medical issues that should not be in that kind of heat. So we are very fortunate and very lucky to be able to have our buses air conditioned. And I'm sure that all other counties have air conditioned buses today. It's not like it used to be. That hot air that you put that window down is not the thing that we want to cool our children with.
I will just say this to you, Mr. Weaver.
I think
I'm sorry, Ms. Booker, I didn't mean to cut you off.
So the air conditioning is needed. That's all right, Mike. I know it's difficult because I can hear
my
echoing too.
You're
but
about,
I think the reality of it, I've kept on the bus a long time, and the bus stopping and starting, and it's just not healthy and comfortable for the kids. Little ones, and the big ones.
Ms. Booker, we'll make sure we get you in if we hear you start, but you're right. You're about 3 seconds behind everybody else when you're talking. But, Mr. Weaver, to go back to your point about the air conditioning, I know that sometimes in these days and times, I know it's required on a lot of the handicap buses are required to have it. They have to have
then,
it now.
Then you use it
and,
when you need it.
But they're also writing it into IEPs and things of that nature for kids.
Well, what has happened to all these back years that we haven't had air conditioning? What happened then?
Drove faster. You can't do that anymore, Mr. Weaver.
Well, I think also a fundamental point is if this is coming from their CIP line, and you know it's a CIP bus line, and it's money that's been allocated, then that's a choice that they're making, as opposed to buying a new bus. In other words, we've already given them that CIP line. You know, was gone through that process
necessarily.
I think if it was a new request and it was coming else. Where that would be different.
This $100,000, Mr. Weaver, is left over from where we gave them, let's say $300,000, and they bought three buses for $290,000. So they had $10,000 left over, or they bought. So this is over the last several years. This is just what's left over in the CIP budget.
Yeah, on page 144, you can see all that information that I took, and they did in the budget allocation. Actually, was this last one was $250,000.
Yes, sir.
And the carryover was 194. Yes.
It's capital reserve.
Yeah, capital reserve. Yeah.
Those are two different things.
Different buckets.
For the buses reserves, are coming out of a different one.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're different buckets. So this is CIP, and the capital. So it sounds. I mean, other than what you've mentioned about the generator, as kind of being on the line, you know. This is CIP money, and CIP money has been allocated.
Yeah, so when the school board had, when the schools had the money allocated for the buses, they had the money, so it's not like they were getting really good deals on buses and they had $100,000 left over. They had $100,000 to buy a new bus, and I know the school board and the schools have been talking about this for probably a good 6 months. I know they've had conversations at school board meetings asking to maybe reallocate the $100,000 to purchase a new bus to do the AC. So this is not like it's money that's just there that comes back to the general fund. This is money that is there. It's been allocated for buses, and it's intended to purchase a new bus. But what they're asking for is using that money just a little differently and put AC in the buses. The money's already there for buses, and if they don't, the board says, you know what, no, we don't want you to put a retrofit AC in the buses, even though that's their request, they can go and buy a bus for $100,000.
Yeah, well, they're always requesting for buses, and they need buses every year, new buses.
Right. And this one, I think, is for those kids that drive out to the far reaches of the county that are on there for an hour and a half. I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to put the buses that are a half an hour route in air conditioning and have the kids that are riding an hour and a half not be in air conditioning. I don't want to speak for you, Mr. Striblin.
No, you're correct, Mr. Sheridan. We're working with, if this does go through, we're working with Ms. Marsh and her team to make sure that we strategically put those buses on the routes that are an hour and a half to 2 hours and 15 minutes long.
All right, thank you, Mr. Striblin. Are there anything else we want to pull from the consent agenda, folks?
Well, what about the roof?
The roof, Mr. Striblin, will you please speak to that at Central?
Absolutely. So Mr. Weaver is correct. It's probably, I followed up with some of the maintenance folks team today. The roof, that central roof in the cafeteria has been leaking for 10 plus years. We have been piecing it together through that. We're worried that it's causing a little bit of damage inside. We've been piecemealing it together. If we were to do the roof now with the capital reserve maintenance for $42,000, it's about $2.80 square feet as opposed to if we were to get a new roof at $10 a square feet. So. We have leaks that are in the cafeteria, electrical. We have leaks that are in the kitchen. where the cafeteria, where the kids actually sit, we have leaks in the hallway that are adjacent to the cafeteria and in the kitchen also. So kitchen, hallway, cafeteria. With the 15,000 square feet, we do get a 10-year warranty with that. And it's very similar to what we did. It's actually the same as what we did with the Fluvanna Middle School building a few years ago.
How many years has this roof been on, the roof that we have now? How old is it?
The roof that we currently have?
Yes. How old is it? Is it 20 years, 25, 30 years?
I do not have that information. I can get it for you, but I would roughly estimate 25 years, Mr. Weaver.
Yeah, well, that's the life of a roof usually then. Sometimes
yes, sir.
That long.
Yes, sir.
So what's the cost of a new roof? You're going to have to do something.
Well, that's what you said it was
the new roof. The new roof would be at a different square footage, and it'd be about $10 a square foot instead of $280 a square foot. You're looking at about $150,000 versus the $42,000 that we're using.
And that would only be new roof on that section, not the entire building.
That's my understanding, yes, sir.
That's been in the CIP too, isn't it?
Why?
That's been in the CIP, hasn't it?
I don't think re-roofing this.
We had some others like that.
Middle school, I guess.
Yeah.
Y'all actually did ours.
Carriesburg and the middle school, their roofs have been done within the past, 1, 2, 3, 4 years or so.
Yeah, it's only been a couple of years since you did middle school.
Yeah.
And I know you have in here a generator also, $69,000 for the office there.
Yes, sir. That came from, it had been informally talked about probably over the last 3 or 4 years. But then 2 years ago, when we had probably a dozen different episodes with inclement weather, power lines, we ran into a lot of difficulty at the school board. It's our central hub for phones, for families getting in touch with us in the schools. The generator would allow us to run our essentials. The initial quote was basically what I would consider turnkey, where there would be no stop. As soon as the power went down, it would turn on. Mr. Dahl and I spoke, we collaborated, we reduced that price. And how we reduced that price was I met with the contractors, and we looked at placement of the generator, we looked at size of the generator, and all of that with regards to material, labor, placement. The other thing that we did inside was, instead of running a brand new box, we decided to integrate an essential box, meaning not everything will be powered, but the essentials would be. Electric, phone, internet, all the things that we need to do to communicate with our families during those outages.
Well, you know, there's talk about building the new office buildings for you all too. I've heard several people want to get rid of that building. And how does that look in the future? If we put something in now in 2 or 3 years, start building. Is that going to be a waste of money then? Put it in now and...
You can move the generators.
Huh?
You can move generators. I mean, you lose some money.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the physical generator itself, the panel, the patch panel that's used, the transfer mat panel is what they call it, they can do that. I've moved a couple of generators, so...
You know how... You can move this one then.
No, I can't move it. But I can tell you what's involved. I can't move it, but I can...
You can give instructions, right?
But that wouldn't be something that we'd leave there. If we did away with that and did a new building, we could either transfer that to one of the rescue squads or... I mean, one of the firehouses or one of the schools.
I thought
systems.
They'd be pretty permanent.
No, it's a concrete pad, and the rest
you
is electrical work.
That.
Yeah. I mean, the unit itself, generators will last 20, 30 years, because they don't run that much, typically.
Okay, I'll let somebody else make the motions then.
Well, when you're not making a motion for me? Okay.
Okay, this is special format to make that motion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. You need to.
It's on the hair.
I move that we approve the consent agenda. Item E, minutes of April 29. Item F, minutes of May 6, 2020. Item G, CRMF, Fluvanna County Public School Central Fire Alarm Panel Replacement. Item H, CRMF, Fluvanna County Public Schools Central Roof Sealant. Item I, CRMF, Fluvanna County Public Schools SPO Generator. Item J, Transportation Fleet Retrofit AC Units. Item K, Accounts Payable Report for April 2020. Item L, Stage Junction Agricultural Forestry Review and Renewal. Item M, Approval of Mr. Andrew W. Wills, CBO, as Building Official for the Fluvanna County. Item N, FY21 Health Insurance Rates and Contribution Schedule. Second?
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
I'll approve it with the explanations you've made.
Okay. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
The chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now go to unfinished business, which is a new business update. Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, so this is just, oops. Hang on right
there. Don't be oopsing me over there.
There we go. Let's get back to that. So, yeah, so under unfinished business, we're going to talk about new business. I know the board had asked, you know, just kind of getting an update on kind of where we are with a couple of the businesses, and it's going to be quick. So, quick update on Fluvanna Firearms. If you remember, Fluvanna Firearms was the business that was going to be going in down there by the Fork Union Animal Hospital. Planning department conducted the technical review committee conference call on May 14th, and they do plan to file a sketch plan before the planning commission on July 14th. Fluvanna Firearms is currently working out final arrangements for relocating his business to Fluvanna. In addition, kind of one of the big kind of slowbacks on that was originally there was a lot of discussion back and forth on the access road to get into the facility. There was talks about, you know, whether it was going through the Fork Union Animal Hospital's mm-hmm. access road. After there was lots of back and forth and determined that that was not the route to go, the applicant submitted an access management exception to VDOT to allow the second entrance. Because generally for commercial entrances, they don't want them right next to each other.
You had a conflict there with the neighbors too.
They did that a little bit. But so instead of going down the road of the conflict, they submitted an access management exception with VDOT. VDOT denied it, but they came back and said, if your engineers can show that this business is going to be what's considered a low volume commercial entrance, which is less than 50 vehicles a day, then we would go through and proceed. Mr. Brookman with Fluvanna Firearms, their engineers did go back and then provide the information to VDOT, submitted to VDOT, appealed it to VDOT, and VDOT did approve a secondary entrance there for that business. So that's where that one is. Regarding LKQ, which is the auto reclamation place on Memory Lane, on March 18th, 2020, they submitted their major site development plan to the planning department. If you remember, per the SUP, they had two years that they had to submit that, and they submitted that. In coordination with planning and per the SUP conditions, it was submitted. Again, the planning department conducted a technical review committee conference call on April 9th, and LKQ and the LKQ's development company does plan to file a sketch plan before the planning commission on either July 14th or August 11th meeting. And they'll work with them again in June to kind of work through a draft sketch plan. So LKQ is moving forward on Memory Lane on that property. And then the final one, Tractor Supply. They're planning on going there on South Boston Road. right there kind of behind the Dollar General on that piece of land. So they filed their site plans and address comments, and they're working out their final stormwater drainage easements. Mr. Wills, the new building official, and Mr. Mayo, the Fluvanna fire chief, they both went there. There was some back and forth whether or not a 6-inch line or an 8-inch line was going to be needed going into the building for fire suppression from because Aqua Virginia is going to be supplying them with the water. It's been determined that the 6-inch water line is sufficient for fire suppression at that building. So they're moving forward. Tractor Supply, they plan to close on the property at the end of May or early June with the property owner. And then final site plans will be submitted to the county VDQ and VDOT for plan approvals.
Very good.
So yeah, so those businesses are moving forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if the board has any, or Mr. Miles maybe he may be able to answer more if the board has anything specific.
Any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. Hearing none, thank you very much for that report. I always love hearing good news. New business.
So this one's a little bit more of a biggie here. So mid last week, the county received notification that there was CARES Act funding that was going to be coming to the county. So let me pull up the brief here. So this is a brief for local allocation for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds. So Congress passed and the president recently signed the CARES Act of 2020. The act provides funding for a bunch of different programs and addresses the pandemic. A primary component of this is $150 billion in assistance to state, local, territorial, and tribal governments to deal with the impact of COVID. And then what they did, they established a coronavirus relief fund. So these funds are to be used for qualifying expenses of state and local governments. And the act provides that payments can, one, only be used for necessary expenditures that occurred due to the public health emergency, were not accounted for in the budget and the most recently approved as of March 27, 2020, and were incurred during the period of March 1, 2020 and ending on December 30th, 2020. So the allocation of funds, so basically the state got funds, they said we're gonna then allocate those funds to the localities, and it's based upon the localities' population. We have, and I sent this out to the board today too, and Caitlin, do you have a copy of the printed one also by chance? The printed, did you print out the?
The allocation, no.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I can.
If you can print out, if it's, I think it's in the package, if not, we'll get it before you go. That's all right. Anyway, it goes through all the guidance and everything like that about it. But Fluvanna County is going to be allocated $2.3 million from the feds for this. Now, we're just not getting $2.3 million, and we can just do what we want while with it. It is to be used very specifically for certain items, and I'm going to go through a whole laundry list. And I'm not looking for today for the board to give any solid direction, but I want the board to start thinking about some things, and I'll kind of tell you what some other localities have done with some of the funding. So again, we're getting $2.3 million. So some examples of what are considered non-exclusive eligible expenditures is medical expenses. Now, some of the items under this maybe aren't necessarily applicable to Fluvanna County as much. Like I said, we don't have any public hospitals or similar facilities. We haven't had to set up any temporary public medical facilities. Costs of providing COVID testing, the BDH is doing that. So a lot of this one isn't really going to be applicable to Fluvanna County under number one, medical expenses. Now, there may be some little small caveats to that. And I'll say I've had a lot of staff that we have been on, because this really came out quick, and there is some guidance on it, but the guidance is mushy, somewhat to say the best sometimes. Finance has been on numerous seminars. Brian Rothma with Economic Development, he's been on numerous webinars and conference calls. He was on one with the Secretary of Finance. So one was a medicine. Second is public health expenses. These could be used for communication of the pandemic, related to public health orders related to COVID-19, or it could be for expenses or acquisition of distribution of medical and protective supplies. This one, we certainly could use funds for this. Now, if you remember, the county can use funds from FEMA, but FEMA only reimburses 75%, correct?
FEMA reimburses 75% and is considered the reimburser of last resort.
Yep.
So what we need to do is use the CARES funding before using FEMA. Now, the difference is FEMA goes back to January 20th. This only goes back to March. Yep. So what we're going to have to do is submit through FEMA for January 20th to March, and hope we get 75% of anything we spent during that time, and then everything from the beginning, whenever
from March until December.
March until December, we'll use CARES Act funding because that's 100%. We get the money up front, and we just have to keep really good records. It's easier than FEMA.
So again, you can use this for sanitizing products, PPE equipment, different types of, as it says here, police officers, social workers, child protective. Things of that nature. So we definitely have some qualifications under this one.
So you turn it back, whatever you don't spend, you have to turn it back.
You have to turn it back, yes. And or unless we find a way to utilize the funds in a very efficient and beneficial manner for the county.
Well, I think one thing that, especially as we're phase one opening up, I mean, a push by the county on a public relations effort to encourage people to wear masks, even getting, a bunch of signs made that people can pick up and put out, advertising in the local papers. To me, I think that's really an important thing to get out there. It can be simple, a very simple thing, something like wear a mask, save lives. Because I think that a lot of people are going out and not paying attention to the fact that as we do this, if we don't do it carefully, we're certainly going to run the risk of spreading the virus. And that's a low cost item. I mean, yeah. Probably $15,000-$20,000. And
yeah.
You could get a lot of information out there. And I think a lot of people would, if they had a placard, put it out as a statement, say, yeah, please do this.
I think it's amazing how they put money out like that. What is $2 million?
Almost $2 million.
$2.3 million.
Yeah.
I mean, and so Miss Solis just gave you a copy of the package that I received, and it's right there in front of you. It's the letter from the Secretary of Finance, and then it kind of goes through U.S. Treasury guides, and it shows you the allocations that every locality is getting. I think in the letter it says that. Was Fairfax or one of the Northern Virginia counties, because they have a greater than 500,000 population, they're getting like something like $200 million or more or something like that. But there's a lot. So under number three, this is for payroll expenses for public safety, public health, healthcare, human services to mitigate the response. And again, there may be some eligible expenditures under this. Number four, expenses to facilitate compliance with COVID-19 related to public health measures. Some of this stuff deals with food delivery to residents. It could deal with teleworking. One of the bullets, providing paid sick and paid family and medical leave to public employees that have to deal with the coronavirus funding. I've already talked to Ms. Rice about this. We already have some employees that are going out on leave due to this, and some of the leave requirements are, if you've got a if you have a child care facility that is closed during this, and if you are, and if there is no other, child care facility for them,
no other option,
then the employee has to stay home. The county still has to pay for the employees to be at home during this. So we just did an initial look, and it also deals with unemployment insurance, if there's any unemployment that the county gets hit with. Ms. Rice did a look on currently where we are. We're probably looking at easily, currently, at about $45,000. And I guarantee you, we're going to probably need to set aside an easy $100,000, $150,000 to deal with some of this stuff as well. And like I said,
because it goes through December,
this goes through December, and this is just starting. I mean, you know, if the county says, look, because right now we basically have all offices closed, employees, not all employees, some employees are teleworking, some are not. But if we say, look, we're opening up business as usual, you need to be in the office, you could get more employees that said, well, look, you know, my child's home. And so, you know, there may be other employees that are going to be eligible for that leave. So there is something there that we can certainly, that we're going to qualify there for. This also talks about state prisons, county jails. We don't have any of those. And then talks about expenses for care of homeless populations. Under number five.
You said state prisons? Yeah. Well, but knock on wood, we haven't had any worries there.
Yeah, but that's more of a...
That's not ours.
Yeah, that's not ours.
Okay, so
yeah.
That doesn't count as ours.
Yeah.
All right.
Under number five, this deals with economic development type support in connection. You know, the county could provide grants to businesses that have been greatly impacted by this. And so the board approved previously the Fluvanna recovery loan, business recovery loan. That's a loan. This is talking about a grant where you could give a business funds because of the impact that it did. As a prime example, I just got something yesterday. I think Prince William County, now granted they're a very large county, they're getting $41 million in this funding, and they're applying $5 million of it towards this, business grants for their business community.
We could expand on what we just did, too.
It can't be something different. Yes, right. So it'd be something different. And what they did is they ended up giving the EDA, and there's criteria. There was very set criteria. The funding was dispersed to the EDA, and the EDA is then monitoring and running the program for the businesses. So that's something that can be done. As I said before, unemployment insurance costs, we're already seeing that, so there's going to be eligible expenditures there. And then number six, any other COVID-related expenses reasonably necessary to the function of government that satisfies the fund's eligibility criteria. Again, when I gave you the whole Treasury guidance, we're going to be going through that in one, you know, we're going to want the board to, you know, what ideas does the board have, and then staff's certainly going to bring some proposals and things that we think that we're going to need to hold the funds back for too, because we're going to see additional expenses from this. It's just a given. Now, here are a list of some items that would not be eligible. One, state share Medicaid, damage covered by property insurance, payroll or benefit expenses for employees who work has not substantially changed due to this. You know, reimbursement to donors for donated items, workforce bonuses, severance pay, legal settlements. You can't use the money for that. You cannot use it as a revenue replacement. So if we see a shortfall of revenue, we can't use it for a revenue replacement. Now I know currently on the federal level, there's some bills being looked at. I think one's called the HEROES Act, which is talking about an amendment to create some type of revenue replacement ability with some funds like this to do that. And then another one that I read that you cannot use it for, personal property tax,
tax relief
or anything like that. But again, in that document, there's lots of, you know, guidance for what you can and cannot. But then again, it's through all these webinars, through all these conference calls, when you're asking folks, well, could it be used for this? Well, they don't ever give you a really clear answer. And so the fact of the matter is, if you use the funds for something that are not eligible per U.S. Treasury guidance, you could be responsible for returning the funds back. And as we said before, whatever we don't spend, whatever we do not utilize, has to be returned and dispersed back to the Commonwealth and subsequently to the federal government. So just one thing. So as I said, we just got this mid last week. And they said, in order to receive the funds, you have to send in a signed certification by May 22nd, and it had to be signed by the chief executive officer, which would be myself, the chief financial officer, Ms. Twisdale, and the chief elected officer, which was Mr. Sheridan, if we wanted those allocated funds to be transferred to localities. So a lot of the guidance is sign the certification, get the funds, and determine what the funds can be used for, because there are going to be eligible expenses that the county is going to incur. So we did that. Mr. Sheridan came by the office yesterday. We got that signed. All three of us signed it, and we sent it in. So now it's really up to the board. Are there things outside of what we are currently doing, or things that we know we're going to have to spend it on, that the board sees moving forward with? Like I said, not looking for any solid stuff, but certainly, you know, I want the board to start thinking about some things. And please look through that U.S. Treasury guidance, because it gives lots of examples for what you can. There's a whole question and answer section at the end, you know, that talks about businesses and talks about a whole slew of other things.
One of the things I showed Mr. Weaver, I didn't show you, that I wrote down just sitting there listening to this, I don't know what the schools are planning on doing this summer. I know they've been doing a meals plan, because this is when we were in school. After this week tonight, could this be something where we work with the school system to do a meal program for the students, not only the students, but if we have families that want to call in and say, hey, we're in need, we need something too.
What we can do, the schools are supposed to be getting money as well, of course.
So this is not counted in their money?
Not, it's our understanding it isn't.
Okay.
however, that doesn't mean that we couldn't divert some their way. We just have to be sure we're not double dipping.
Well, my thought was, if they're going to be doing a meals program just for the kids, mm-hmm. If we could say, hey, could you expand that to also once a week provide meals if a family wants to drive through? Maybe they don't have children, but it's a family in need.
Yeah.
If we could add them in, and then we just provide the funding to take care of that portion of it.
Yeah.
And some of the discussion has been around if we already have something in place that's doing that, like a food pantry, say MACA,
yeah,
for example,
right.
That we could give them money.
Columbia Baptist.
Right, any of those places, we could give them funds. Now, they have to have a plan, you know, this is government money, so they have to have a plan on what they're going to do and what they're going to service and this, that, or the other. But we could give them additional funds to provide food, food bank, food pickups, or whatever, to the general public, to the Fluvanna County citizens. We'll just need to get with them to establish it.
Okay.
Kind of
government. All right. Well, I know the Fluvanna Baptist, or not Fluvanna Baptist, doggone it. The one right beside the sheriff's house. Ms. Booker, help me out. Which church is right beside the sheriff's farm?
Fox Memorial.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Fox Memorial is doing a food bank.
Memorial. Yeah.
Who else, Ms. Booker, besides Fox Memorial? And I know Columbia Baptist does one.
Antioch Baptist Church does.
Antioch?
Yes.
Do we have a copy of what you just showed us?
Yeah,
the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You didn't send that to us, did you?
I did, Ms. Booker. I emailed it to all the board. I emailed it to the board, I think, today. You should have it.
Yeah. You know what time I saw this money, but I don't remember. Maybe I didn't scroll down far enough. I didn't see all the criteria.
Yeah, there.
I'll look on my.
There was a document attached to that email.
Mr. Dahl.
Yes.
Oh, so you had an attachment problem.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't look at the attachment. I'm looking at my
The attachment is pretty robust and shows a lot of things, gives you lots of examples of things you can and cannot. And then there's, as I said, there's a big like a big question and answer section at the end. Can I use it for this? Yes or no? Can I use it for this? Yes or no? But maybe not this. So but definitely read through the document.
All right.
Mr. Dahl, I'd like to suggest that you check with Meals on Wheels.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Okay.
The other thing that comes to mind is, I mean, I think Ms. Booker brought up about our health office here not actually having a nurse, and possibly we can do that during this period of time as well, too. Sounded like that was a possibility, and also maybe even looking at expanding the telemedicine. I mean, we have to coordinate with them, but certainly something that, you know, if this continues to grow, it might be a necessary thing to look, consider.
We hope it gets less, don't we?
We do.
It is starting down that way.
We'll find out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We'll find out. So.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, look at the guidance, look at the document. It's, like I said, it's not bad reading. I mean, it's very informational, and it kind of gives some ideas. And, you know, we're gonna try and think about how can the money be used to, one, offset, because we're going to see expenses, but is there something that benefits the citizens of this county some way that is eligible to be used? But that's a board decision. So, but we'll bring some ideas forward, and, you know, and whatever ideas the board has, and we'll try and run it to the ground to see if it kind of fits within the criteria. But that's really it for that, unless the board has any other questions. Now, if you want to, I can bring this back at the next meeting to determine how we want to move forward with this, or we can wait a little bit and see how things shake out. We're definitely going to be setting up, so when the funds come in, we can set it up in an interest-bearing account. But again, the funds, the interest that you earn, you have to use it for the same types of things. Talking to Ms. Twisdale, we're going to be setting up the funds either in its own department budget, almost creating like there's a finance budget. We're going to be creating a coronavirus funds budget or its own fund or something like that, just so it's easily trackable. So
I'd say we probably ought to have a short 5-minute, 10-minute discussion if we have any ideas.
I think that's a good idea.
Or next week.
I think
this is going to carry on. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. This goes on for now.
It doesn't need to be an hour-long discussion, but 5 or 10 minutes, if we come up with any ideas, that way the public hears the ideas that we get instead of us just calling to the office and saying and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're also hoping to get a little bit more direction because every time questions are asked, the answers are deflected a little, and so we still don't have full understanding of exactly what we can and cannot do. So we're hoping to get a little bit more direction as time goes on. There are a lot of different groups of people working on that. So.
You know, and from the county standpoint too, you know, at some point we're going to have to reopen. We're going to have to get back to some semblance of business and reopening. And, you know, we're already looking at things that we're doing to just, you know, put some protection in place, whether it's putting some type of, you know, glass in front of here or just making some, you know, slight improvements to protect the public that's coming in, especially those locations that are constant, that people coming in day in and day out, hour by hour, minute by minute. So
the courthouse
already had some upgrades, you know, downstairs in planning and building inspections. They see a lot of folks coming in. You know, the treasurer's office, they're pretty well sealed off. But anyway, so there's things like that these funds can be used for. Anything that is related that we have to do differently. If we have to pay someone overtime to make sure, here's a good example. Say at some point we need to, when the county opens up and we get big tax lines out there, we need to make sure people are keeping like a 6-foot distance, and say the sheriff's office has to be out there. If there's overtime, that overtime would be eligible for an expense like this. So there's lots of things that we're going to be looking at, because there's going to be COVID-related expenses, whether we like it or not. They're just...
Have all the taxes been sent out, do you know?
Yeah, all the tax bills,
have been sent out?
Yeah, I know. They went out last Wednesday. People started receiving them Friday. I got mine Saturday.
I got mine yesterday.
Yep, some Monday.
I haven't seen mine
Well,
yet.
If anybody's listening, I would just like to make this very clear. If anybody is listening, please do not call the commissioner's office. Please do not call the treasurer's office and complain. Your taxes are behind because we were waiting to see what was going to happen. We waited as long as we could to set our budget because we had no idea of what was going on with the coronavirus and the effects of it. So it is not their fault that they're behind. We held on to our decision as long as we possibly could.
I already got my tax bill.
I got mine yesterday. So you'll probably get yours today or tomorrow. Yeah. If you didn't get it, I don't know if you checked today.
Didn't get it today.
So it should be out there tomorrow.
Yeah, another item though about this. So I think,
Miss Booker.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, ma'am.
I thought that was pretty nice. People were looking for the taxes. They were anxious.
Well, there have been a few
anxious to get that tax bill.
There have been a few people fussing about how late they were.
My tax bill. I want to pay my tax. I thought that was good.
Yes, ma'am. There have just been a few rumblings about them being late. I just wanted to make sure that I said it on public notice that you blame me if you want to blame somebody for the tax.
Yeah, we'll blame you.
Speaking of the tax really quick, not to get completely sidetracked. Yeah. We put some temporary signs out too around the area just letting folks know that the commissioner and treasurer's office is currently closed. There's the payment drop box. People can drop off their check, money order, or they can pay online tax payments there. So there are options or mail it in. So
going back to this real quickly, though, I would think that, again, I know part of the testing that is being done by the Department of Health, and it's great that we've already had two sets of tests. I know they haven't been super well attended, but
I'll say one thing about the tests too. We just got notification today that they're now opening up the testing for others that are not
You don't have to be symptomatic.
You don't have to be symptomatic.
So yeah, I mean, if we can use part of the funds, it sounds like we can for expanding testing or at least having it on a weekly basis. That would be a good thing because being tested once isn't really enough if it's ongoing.
Yeah. So like I said, that's where as the board kind of gets out in the community, as you're kind of out and about and you're thinking about this, reading through this, you're going to come up with lots of different ideas, and we're going to be keeping track of the things that we know that are things that are going to be affecting the county's budget. And at some point too, when we get these funds, we're going to come forward with the board because we're going to have to do a public hearing and a budget supplement, because getting these funds is more than 1% of the budget. And I'm not sure if we're getting it in this fiscal year or next fiscal year.
And we don't know the answer to that. So we may have to do a 20 public hearing and then carry it forward.
Yeah.
At this point, we don't know yet.
Yeah. Right. It's just like everything else we've talked about with this virus. It's brand new, and we're going to have to wing it sometime.
I mean, literally, this came out just after we had the agenda done last week. It came out and said you have to get it turned around quick, and so that's what we did. And so we just wanted to just kind of give you an update on what it's about, what it can be used for, and start thinking for the future.
How many cases do we have? How many cases does Blue Valley County have now? Is it still at 78?
Yesterday, Mrs. Booker, we were at 82 cases. We were at 21 hospitalizations and 6 fatalities, and from a week before, we were at 79 cases, 20 hospitalizations, and 6 fatalities. So within a week, we went up 3 cases and then 1 hospitalization.
Mike, I have something I'd like to add.
What is the percent of African Americans in that 82?
We would have to pull that up from the VDH site. And Mrs. Booker, I don't have that information handy really quick.
Right now.
Catherine used to give it to us on Friday. It was Friday evening. She's not doing that anymore.
Nope.
So you have to go to the website.
Yep, they update the website daily now. And they have lots of graphics about how it affects male, female, race, lots of other demographic data to show for Blue Valley County.
Hey, Mike, I'd like to say something.
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Eager.
I did get to talk to Dr. Bonds about my concern of we don't have that many primary care doctors, And what did we need to tell the public? I put it on Facebook. That's the only way I could communicate. So I gave her Thomas Jefferson's number and the UVA number. And she also gave me her private number that people could call her directly. Because a lot of people do not have a primary care doctor. So that was a concern for me, for people didn't know who to call. So Facebook was the only thing. And I know that fan mail, Kelly has been doing an excellent job, and I pull information from that fan mail and send it out as far as I can as well.
Ms. Eager, you had something you wanted to say?
Yes, I was talking to the owner of Hill and Wood Funeral Home, and I don't know if you've had this experience in your business, but they are lacking PPPs, and he had to go out and get butcher aprons to bury some of the coronavirus people. So I don't know if we can get those things, we could probably put them to good use. I don't think people realize that that's an important part of what's going on, too.
One thing I can tell you, Ms. Eager, is I know from the state, and I'm not sure, is Debbie on? Well, anyway, from the state, I know funeral homes have kind of fallen into the purview of the county to provide some supplies. Debbie, can you talk about that?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The state put homes under emergency managers, and I have reached out to all the funeral homes and only heard back from one, and I have already gotten them PPE. Well, but if they have any needs, they just need to respond to me, and I can help them take care of that.
We only have three in the county. Well,
we have four
in the county. We'll get back to one tonight.
Yeah.
We have four in the county.
Yep. We have Ms. Smith. She got the information for all of them and reached out to them, let her know. And then, you know, if equipment's needed, because she's, who are you going to, Debbie, are you getting it from VDEM?
Yes. Yep. From the state.
I'll give my nephew a call tonight, see if he got back in touch with me.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, have him email me or call me.
Yes, ma'am. Any other questions?
Now, Hill and Wood is not in our county.
No, ma'am.
They happen to live on my street. That's how I know that they have had a problem.
But they should reach out to their county, and their county should be able to help them.
Charles City, Charlottesville. I'm not sure if they're Albemarle City, Charlottesville, but they're one of their city.
Okay.
Okay. All righty. Any other questions? But I do think this is something we probably ought to have about a 5 or 10 minute conversation. We don't need to go over the whole thing again.
No.
But we need to talk about the ideas that we come up with, if anybody has any.
Uh-huh.
All right.
No.
So last one is property acquisition, Mr. Dahl.
This will be really quick. Maybe it'll be quick if Fred does it. We'll see.
That's not bad.
Really quick. The Wells property in Fork Union. Mr. Wells sent me an email on Monday that his family have all signed off on the contract, and supposedly it's in the mail. Haven't gotten it yet.
Okay, cool. Yes. Sounds good.
So that's the property right down there in Fork Union, so mm-hmm. that one big contiguous property when that's all said and done.
That was really quick, though.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to put ALQ over there in Fork Union.
They chose to do the other one.
Yep.
You heard that, Moselle? That's all right.
Yes, I'm aware.
Okay.
But this also means once we get it, we'll have a 100-acre plus property, which looks better.
Yeah.
That puts you on the on potential sites. So
that's good.
Yep.
We can go to phase two pretty quickly.
And talking about this, I told you I wanted to bring it up last meeting, and I forgot to do it. But this is just something that we get in the very back, and it's the very back page of our booklet. I looked at it last week. I know there's been talk about how buildings has been crushed, our housing prices were going down. Mr. Wills gives us a report. It's the back end of our package every week. Mr. Wilson will just bring up what you've done. I looked at it, and the thing I wanted to bring up is we thought that housing was going to go down, especially because of the coronavirus crisis. So far, and comparing this year with the last five years, in January we were number one for the most housing starts. February we were number one. In March, when the coronavirus outbreak happened, we were number one by a long ways. Had 22 housing starts in March, and even in April, the full month that we had with coronavirus, the highest one was 15, and this year we had 14 housing starts. So
looks like we're headed for more than 120.
It's 61 thus right. far, compared to 119 for the whole year last year. We're only a third of the year.
We have Mr. Wills, our new building official, on if he wants to add a few little comments.
Mr. Wills?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Just giving you a shout out if you want to talk about your sheet that you gave us and just building throughout the county.
Yeah, it seems like the Village Oaks has really increased that number a lot. We've got some more that's going to be coming out there, hopefully issued this week or next week. It's probably going to jump us up at 6 to 10 more houses for the month of May. So that seems the demand in that location is really taking off. And seeing some other big houses throughout the county. So we're not seeing anything as of yet that, you know, is affected by the virus whatsoever. Today was one of the busiest inspection dates that especially Mr. Vaughn had talked about with me that they've had in a long time.
Where's Village Oaks?
Right across from Crofton Plaza, just above the main gate at the Lake Monticello.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And now I'm going to ask one thing, and I haven't been riding around because we haven't been doing any behind the wheel since the middle of March. But the circle, they've talked about in our reports that it's starting to work up there. Yep. What's going on at the circle?
So basically, I can tell you I'm forgetting the landowner, but the land that was proffered, mm-hmm. was all wooded. That's been all cleared out. They're already kind of graveling stuff. They're working on, clearing out some of the new paths. So if you go up there, they are definitely working. And I'm not sure if Mr. O'Brien and you.
Oh yeah, it's very evident. I mean, yeah.
Well, that's going to be the next thing when that gets finished. That circle gets finished. Is how soon will they start on the project that we approved?
Colonial Circle.
With the 300.
Mr. Miles could speak on that. Okay. Mr. Miles, can you speak on Colonial Circle?
Yes, sir. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. we are. We've been working with Schimpf Engineering about getting their. Master plan in for Colonial Circle. It looks like they're going to be doing that with us in June. Justin Schimpf has set up some of that with us, and we've had interest from the folks who are doing the multifamily part of the development for getting financing and doing all that. So it's been active here towards the end of the spring. Yes.
Yeah, so once Colonial Circle kicks in, I mean, I think, Mr. Miles, was that for 375 residences, multifamily, single family?
10 multi-resident, I think.
325, I believe, for total.
Yeah, so we're busy right now. Once those things start moving, I mean, there's going to be a point where building inspections isn't going to be able to do it with the two guys that they have out there right now.
I got faith in those young men over there.
They're going to work hard.
All right. I just wanted to bring that up. I mean, it was something I thought about last week because the additions and alterations, I mean, March, January, and February, they're the highest in the last 5 years by a long shot. And then March, it fell off. But in April, it went back up to where it's the second highest total in 5 years. So. All right.
That's good.
All right. So
good
now
information.
I will close new business. I will now open up the second round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Ms. Harris, do we have anybody waiting to speak?
No, sir.
Okay, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Flannery County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A6 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing investment of funds.
And just one thing, Mrs. Booker and Mrs. Eager, once Mr. Sheridan does the vote, I'll have to call you both to get you into the closed session.
Okay.
All righty. We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Mrs. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
The chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
The Savannah County Board of Supervisors. Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned. The Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in an open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that, to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Mrs. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker? Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now out of closed session. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.